Attention, patriots. Broadcasting from the Free Zones, Radio Free Redoubt begins in 5, 4, 3, 2...
Welcome to the voice of the American Redoubt. This is Radio Free Redoubt, and I am John Jacob Schmidt here, your host, here for episode 1939. That's episode 19-39, the 39th podcast, Sunday evening podcast of 2019. You're already at the end of October. I was just going to torture you guys with the countdown for how many shopping days of Christmas left, but I won't do that to you. But, man, it's coming up. Snow is in the air. You can smell it. It is actually in some places in the American Redoubt, in the free zones. And we like it. It's beautiful. Anyway, I hope you guys had a really blessed week. Had a great time this weekend with some patriots. Got to get together and for socializing in the heart of the American Redoubt. And just some really wonderful people, some great conversations. And great food. I love those times, and I love this time of year. I always say that. You guys are probably getting tired of hearing it. I love fall. There, I said it anyway. I couldn't help it. It's my favorite. All right. So anyway, listen. Glenn Tate has gotten his ham radio license. He's got his radio on the air. He's making contacts. He's all excited like a little kid at Christmas, and it's just great. I've been really rooting for him actually for a long time, because hey, emergency communications is, from a prepper's point of view, is usually pretty low on the priority list. And now we're seeing a lot of folks see that, the importance of that, trying to, you know, now they're taking that seriously and moving that up on the list. I'm prompting him for a long time. So now he's finally out there doing it. And it's just a really cool thing. So congratulations to him, to Glenn, and all of you out there that are getting your emergency communications up and going. Speaking of that, kind of ties into the news and commentary here in just a little bit, but we've got several California stations on the air making contact, sending out some of the information. A lot of it's open source information, stuff that's coming out on the local news there, developments with the spreading wildfires in Northern California. And so they're sending out what they're reporting on their local news. A lot of people are without power, though. And so we are monitoring. We haven't raised the AMCON level, but we've got a lot of AMRON stations on the air monitoring right now, and just, I guess, kind of beaconing, just saying, hey, I'm here. I got a pulse. And a lot of operators outside of the affected area standing by and just checking their radios and their communications, their software, their computer from time to time, to see if there's any text messages for updates or anyone in harm's way that might need to be calling for assistance. So we've got a lot of that going on this week right now. And just remember the patriots in your prayers right now that are in the People's Democratic Republic of California, trapped in the socialist state. And they're there for, because they have to be, for one reason or another, but they're there. So God bless them. And we're standing by as a lifeline for any of those guys that need to call out for help during that emergency, until they can get strategically relocated to one of the free zones. So anyway, let's get into the news and commentary. The news and commentary is brought to you by the author, Glenn Tate, who is on the airwaves right now, having a blast. Glenn Tate is the author of the 10 book series, 299 days, about the collapse in the socio-political collapse in America and the rebuilding afterward. And all 10 books are out now on audio. So check that out at 299days.com. Okay. The first one I picked up out of Yahoo News. You guys are aware now that the one of the leaders, one of the main ringleaders of ISIS was killed. That's been confirmed. Special Operations Forces, HUA. Thank you, guys. God bless you for your service. Stay safe. But Homeland warns of ISIS retaliation in the U.S. by ISIS sympathizers. And so that's the story here. Homeland warns of ISIS retaliation. Federal authorities just today urged law enforcement across the country to be alert for possible attacks inside the United States in retaliation for U.S. airstrikes against the Islamic group ISIS. The brutal terrorist group, like we need an explanation of what ISIS is, right? In a joint bulletin issued to local, state, and federal law enforcement, why the citizenry, I don't know, because this clearly falls into the go armed everywhere category of the news. And this applies to, well, this is what we try to place emphasis on, and that's civil defense, where the joint bulletin is issued to local, state, and federal law enforcement. So much for the citizenry, right? It's continuity of government that they're really placing the most emphasis on. Well, we'd like to place emphasis on civil defense. It's the defense of our nation by the citizenry, including our local and state law enforcement, right? But the Department of Homeland Security and the FBI said that while they are unaware of any specific credible threats against the homeland, and they find most threats to the U.S. homeland by supporters of ISIS not credible, they cannot rule out attacks in the United States from sympathizers radicalized by the group's online propaganda. So, hey, go armed everywhere, right? Stay alert, look alive, have good situational awareness about what's going on around you. And chances are you won't need it. But you never know. If you could be thrust into one of those situations where you have to defend life, innocent life, be ready to do that. It could be your own or your family's, right? The next story from the New York Times. Now, this is where I'm going to deviate wildly from the news and commentary, where I'm just hitting some headlines, making some comments about the news, because this is actually going to be a segment in and of itself. You guys remember the last couple of weeks, we saw all of these flare-ups, these civil unrest protests in all of these cities around the world, like spontaneously and simultaneously. It's strange. From Chile to Lebanon. And so I pulled up this New York Times article because they go into some of the details about these. Like in Chile, the spark was an increase in subway fares. Really? You believe that? Subway fares. Okay, well, let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Let's say there were riots and protests that turned violent all across the country. But in Chile, it was because they were so upset about increases in subway fares. In Lebanon, it was attacks on WhatsApp calls for phone calls. The mobile app WhatsApp, encrypted private text messaging and phone calling and video calling app. Well, they want to tax it. So that was the excuse for those in Lebanon. The government of Saudi Arabia moved against hookah pipes in India. It was about onions in Lebanon. Prime Minister Saad al-Hariri survived recent embarrassing revelations about a $16 million gift to a bikini model whom he met at a luxury resort. And so I guess now this is they're rising up against the Lebanon's ruling class. They were so incensed over this. Do you really believe that? I mean, where people are sending pictures of their private parts to each other on these apps, and then the president sends a picture of a bikini model, and now they're going to riot in Lebanon. I'm not buying it. So, what else we have here? Oh, Revolucion in Barcelona, Spain. More than 500,000 people thronged the streets. 500,000 people took to the streets when a court sentenced former separatist leaders to prison. Now, this is all happening, not to mention Hong Kong, but that's not mentioned here. What's interesting is because these people are not protesting. What's the difference? In Hong Kong, they're protesting communism in support of freedom and democracy, waving the American flag, right? But that's not mentioned in any of these. Syria, the boogeyman, said, Algeria and Sudan showed that chaos does not have to be the answer. Even in Saudi Arabia, where the threat of government repression makes public protests practically unthinkable, an unusual rebellion erupted on social media over a 100% tax on bills at restaurants with water pipes or hookahs. So where you could end up dying when the government catches you in an uprising, they're going to now cross the threshold and risk their lives to protest and take to the streets and have social unrest, civil unrest, over a tax hike on hookah pipes. Well, the Forward Observer keyed in on this. The Chilean government called out a national police unit to enforce the rules, which led to an even greater backlash. Since then, activists have damaged dozens of metro stations, ransacked hundreds of local Walmart brand stores, pharmacies, gas stations, and other shops that line the streets of Santiago. Rene Rojas, who teaches at the State University of New York, recently penned an article for the Socialist Magazine. Now, I think we're starting to get to the heart of the matter here. So he keys in on this. A State University of New York professor in the United States penned an article for the Socialist Magazine, Jacobin, in which he writes, "Now is the time for an escalation of the struggle in Chile into a national strike that can build a real economic and political democracy in its wake." I think socialists really want democracy. Well, they want total democracy. It's mob rule, right? He quoted one Chilean activist who explained, "If we don't mess stuff up," I'm trying to sanitize this, this is a family show. "If we don't blank, blank up, we don't exist to the ruling elites." This is against the ruling elites. Key in on that. We don't exist to those that are in power, the ruling elites. So the Inland Northwest Report just came out with an article, or they just posted an article, reposted an article. UN, as in United Nations, inciting youth rent-a-mobs for globalism. And here we are getting to the heart of the matter. Because you can look at this and like, what would prompt globally in multiple cities and countries where it's a very serious crime to rise up against the government, for this to happen simultaneously at multiple cities around the world? And they're all for different reasons, supposedly. Oh, taxes on onions, taxes on texting apps, or the increase in subway fares, but all of it at the same time. And they're all yelling the same stuff, down with the ruling class. And I think that William Jasper, Bill Jasper, the senior editor at the New American, nails it. All right. And he says, he writes this article. It's too long for me to go into in depth, but I will link it in the highlights and resources posting. You guys, or you can go to the Inland Northwest Report and link through to it. It's INLAND, Inland, NW, short for Northwest, report.com, inlandnwreport.com. And he asks, how does one go about organizing a worldwide protest involving millions of grade school, high school, and college students in hundreds of cities on the same day, such as, say, the recent global climate strike that coincided with the United Nations Youth Climate Summit on September 20th, while the central stage for this mass spectacle is New York City. Parasympathetic events miraculously materialized in London, Paris, Tokyo, Bangkok, Bogota, Budapest, Bucharest, San Salvador, Belgrade, Zagreb, and virtually every other major city. So, let me skip through. The reporter, Bill Jasper, attended recently the 68th United Nations Civil Society Conference, Civil Society, held in Salt Lake City, Utah. And that happened this summer in August. The organizers of that affair had taken particular care to bring together over 1,000 pre-selected, quote-unquote, youth leaders from around the globe to help orchestrate the chorus of young people demanding that politicians, quote unquote, do something to stop the global warming doomsday, or they say we all will face extinction. Although the Civil Society Conference dealt with a broad array of issues detailed in the UN's Agenda 2030 and its Sustainable Development Goals, the UN poobahs running the show repeatedly stressed the importance of attending the Youth Climate Summit in New York and organizing similar protests across the planet. And he outlines, this is how it works. The organized globalists at the Council on Foreign Relations and related organizations, together with the UN hierarchy, the center of really global Marxism, select a crisis du jour, whether it's global warming, poverty, refugees, etc., that will justify calls to empower the UN for collective action. That's the first one. Part two, non-governmental organizations organized and funded by tax-exempt foundations, globalist corporations, and government agencies clamor for enacting UN-proposed solutions. Number three, the UN's non-government organization army recruits and trains thousands of young people to be the youth leaders for building the impression of widespread global support. Four, youth conferences with fully funded airfare, living accommodations, meal stipends, etc. are provided to the new youth activists to hone their organizing and media communication skills. Five, the fake news media and the progressive educational establishment saturate our children and youth with nonstop propaganda aimed at terrorizing them about alleged existential crises. And finally, number six, the same mainstream media provide an outlet for the fear they have generated by providing heroes and heroic action for the terrified youngsters to emulate, in this case, Swedish schoolgirl sensation Greta Thunberg and her climate strike. That was pathetic to watch. So, to ensure success, progressive politicians and their educrat allies declare support for the climate strike. Now, that's just the climate strike. But now, we are seeing a major increase in this communist talking points, right? Tax the rich, down with the establishment, and these kids are really uprising in these cities across the world. And you would think, how could they do this uncoordinated? It seems coordinated. Well, it is. So anyway, I wanted to spend a little bit of extra time on that, drilling down a little deeper into that to find out, you know, exactly what we're up against. And some of the stuff they say, you know, what do they say? Tax the rich. Actually, you know what? I agree. I saw a car the other day. It had tax the rich spelled out with masking tape across the hood. I thought, it's beautiful. Let's start with the government. They're the richest entity around, and they don't produce anything. So if we're going to tax the rich, let's start with the government. Want to redistribute wealth? Let's redistribute what they've taken to the from the people and give it back to the people. That'd be a great start. Of course, after you do that, you could stop there. You wouldn't have to go any further. Just tax the rich. Tax the government. Get the money back to the people. You'd be done. Anyway, California wildfires trigger statewide emergency and force nearly 200,000 people to evacuate. And that's what we are watching right now. The Kincaid Fire in Sonoma County and the Tick Fire in Los Angeles County, appropriately named, had burned about 35,000 acres. Well, now there's about 200,000 people that are under evacuation orders, a couple million people without power right now. And we're, you know, continuing to monitor that. Very interesting. But I want to go into that one. I want to drill deeper into that one in the second segment when we come up to wildfires and something that the governor of California had to say right along these lines. Marxist globalist drivel. And that's the root of what we're up against, with all these people being without power, rolling power, socialism, the effects that has on countries. And I think that is what we are seeing right now in the People's Democratic Republic of California. Last week, a sickening story about the court ruling that a 7-year-old boy must undergo this transition surgery to become a girl because the mom wanted this boy to be a girl and the father was completely taken out. He was fighting this and people went to their dropped to their knees in prayer. They've been praying hard all week. Well, we've got an update here from Redoubt News. Praise God. A huge win for 7-year-old twin boys in Texas. The father will continue to have a say in the health and welfare of both of his children. This was written by Sherry Duvalli over at Redoubt News. Great job following up on this. Judge Kim Cooks has ruled that the 7-year-old boys whose mother wants to turn one of the twins into a girl would remain under a joint managing conservatorship under both parents. The mom doesn't get to just go off the rails and decide that one of her boys should become a girl without the father having any say and being otherwise. He was previously just removed from having a say in this. Just atrocious. So apparently the judge from LifeSite News says the judge presiding over the case of Jeffrey Younger, the father who's trying to protect his 7-year-old son, James, from chemical castration via a gender transition, ruled today that the parents will have joint conservatorship over James, which includes making joint medical decisions for the child. This is a huge victory. And it's just staggering that these are even in our news headlines today in America. But anyway, I got lots more to talk about on that. We'll cover that in the second segment. Something else I want to talk about. But finally, we'll wrap up the news and commentary here with the stark raving mad. Somebody finally is back at the Switch. It's good to see them posting content over there. One of the stories I'm going to be covering in the next segment. But from rhinopack.org, this is the Rhino Hunters of North Idaho, rhinopack.org, from their stark raving mad page, out of Germany. This happened on the 26th of October, which was yesterday. It said they posted, "This morning on the streets of Limburg, a Muslim man became agitated with one of his wives. To punish her for her transgression, he ran over her with his car. Rather than expiring quietly as an obedient wife should, she cried out from the pain of her injuries, and enraged at her impudence, the Muslim grabbed an axe from his car and chopped her head off. It is not clear if he kept the axe handy specifically to deal with spousal interactions or it had some other use. In any case, the German government's reaction to this migrant savagery was immediate. Anyone who posted copies of the video or shared it in any way would be immediately prosecuted to the full extent of the law." The leading German newspaper, Das Spiegel, gave the official version of the barbarity. Das Spiegel wrote, "A man hurt his wife so badly that she subsequently died." Quote unquote. Madness. They've lost their minds. They're so out of touch with reality. I know it's so frustrating for the Germans to actually do our patriots and see this madness for what it is. And they can't speak out against it. Anyway, it says it has been reported that the UN is moving quickly to address the situation. They have issued calls to ban assault axes worldwide. Axes have been used on battlefields for centuries, and there is no reason for these weapons of war to be in the hands of civilians. Yeah, who wouldn't agree with that, right? Well, this would almost be funny, and but the sad part is this is not satirical. This is a real event that really took place, of course, with the stark raving mad editors throwing in their own commentary in there as well, which is, makes it amusing. But it is a sad story. It's a sad reality that the poor folks in Germany who don't want to embrace their invaders have to endure. So anyway, let's go ahead and take a break. And when we come back, got a lot more stuff to cover. I'm going to talk about socialism, infrastructure, and the wildfires here at the Voice of the American Redoubt. Stay right there.
Adams said, "If you love wealth more than liberty, the tranquility of servitude better than the animating contest of freedom, Depart from us in peace. We ask not your counsel, nor your arms. Crouch down and lick the hand that feeds you. May your chains rest lightly upon you, and may posterity forget that you are our countrymen. These bold words were a scathing rebuke against his fellow countrymen, who preferred to let tyranny prevail for a few handouts from the crown. I echo Mr. Adams' timeless sentiments. Sadly, today, we are once again surrounded by fellow countrymen who have lost their will to continue in the contest of freedom and have determined to become slaves for the tranquil lives they hold more dear than the liberty they've squandered. And as an American, I struggle to call them my countrymen. I'm Violette Sabo, with points to ponder, words to live by, and ideals which define us.
Welcome back. This is segment two of Radio Free Redoubt. Welcome, Patriots. Segment two is brought to you by Selkirk Mountain Real Estate. They specialize in helping like-minded folks just like yourselves get strategically relocated to the panhandle of North Idaho, especially up in Boundary County and that surrounding area. If you are looking to get moved into the free zones and that's where you've got your sights set, check them out at SelkirkMountainRealEstate.com. All right. And hey, don't forget to check out the Gem State Patriots senior editor's separate page that he's got going, socialismtoday.info, with evidence, documented evidence of growing socialism in America. So you can be aware. Now, speaking of growing socialism, let's go to this news, which I covered in the news and commentary section. California wildfires sweeping the country, sweeping the countryside in California. And now Governor Newsom has declared a statewide emergency due to these fires and extreme weather conditions. This guy's a real piece of work. Marxist socialism, socialist rhetoric continuously coming from this guy. But this press release from the governor's office, actually they're .gov or .ca, says this: today, Governor Gavin Newsom declared a statewide emergency due to the effects of unprecedented high winds events, which have resulted in fires and evacuations across the state. They're talking about 30,000 acres to date and the evacuation of almost 200,000 people. Hundreds of structures threatened now. Dozens have already burned down. Some about the same dozens damaged. They say there are about 3,000 local, state, and federal personnel, including first responders, assisting with the Kincade Fire alone. So while firefighters are fighting the fires with water trucks and planes and pickaxes and bulldozers, the governor is spearheading his contribution to the effort by announcing a $75 million program for state and local governments to mitigate impacts of power shutoffs and unveil a series of new partnerships. That's a scary word. And new tools, another scary, vague word, to help secure medically vulnerable populations during these events. $75 million program. So I'm sure the $75 million program, I would be stunned if it had anything to do with actually clearing debris away from these high tension power lines, because that would impact the environment and probably some salamander somewhere or some bug that would be offended by humans encroaching on its habitat. So no, we're not going to go to the source of the problem here. We're just going to throw more money at the effects that are created by these insane environmental policies that are implemented all in the name of, you know, fighting climate change. Well, now they've been fighting climate change for so long, now they have to fight the effects of their failed socialist policies and the global climate change lie that they've gotten so many people duped into believing. So when you create a problem, when the government creates a problem, the solution is to just keep throwing money at it, regardless of the results. And that's what they're doing. But Governor Newsom comes out railing against PG&E outages. That's the Pacific Gas and Electric, who are cutting off the power because of these high winds hitting trees and other brush, causing arcing, causing these fires. And they just grow out of control like they're doing. So as a preventative measure, they are cutting power. Now the governor is assailing them, apparently, in the name of saying that they are engaged in corporate greed. And where he says corporate greed meets climate change. Unreal. So Governor Gavin Newsom issued another scathing rebuke of the mass blackouts roiling California on Thursday, telling the state's three major investor-owned electric utilities that they have not worked well enough with the government as they cut power to too many people for too long. Well, hey, I'll bet you probably already thought of this, Governor. These major investor-owned electric utilities haven't been cooperating with the government. You should probably just take them over, right? I'll bet you're already in some back room working that deal to not nationalize, but make those state-owned utilities. And that'll solve all the problems, right? I mean, that worked for Venezuela. Oh, wait, it didn't. But this is where he gets further down in this article here, which is from, where was that from? Oh, the San Francisco Chronicle. He said, at a news conference in Los Angeles Thursday, Newsom reiterated his points, slamming California's three investor-owned utilities for not getting serious about partnering with the state in anticipation of the wildfire season. So he reserved his harshest criticism for PG&E. Here comes the commie alert, the Marxist socialist statement alert. Noting at the news conference that during the widespread outages in Northern California earlier this month, the utility was unable to keep its website running, handle the volume of calls it was receiving, or establish enough resource centers for affected customers, he said it showed the level of mismanagement that persists. And so here he says, it's about dog-eat-dog capitalism. Capitalism's the problem here now. Meeting climate change. It's about dog-eat-dog capitalism meeting climate change. It's about corporate greed meeting climate change. It's about decades of mismanagement. And what's interesting is even in Venezuela, their socialist policies led to an increasingly deteriorating infrastructure, including their power, which they had to endure rolling brownouts, blackouts, and everything else because of socialist policies. And they always blame someone else. They blame corporate greed. They blame capitalism. And they say that it's a conflict, it's mismanagement, as capitalism meets climate change, or as corporate greed meets climate change. Unreal. So there is a great point made here, the article that was picked up by the Stark Raving Mad page of the Rhino Pack. This is what I wanted to cover here. And it's titled Environmental Suicide. And that is what's happening here. It's environmental suicide in the name of environmentalism or fighting climate change. In California, just on the 24th of October, just a few days ago, this is what they write. Of course, in their satirical way, but it's not satire. It's real, sadly. Devastating fires burn throughout the Third World Republic of California. The fires are largely a result of decades of Democrat extremist environmental groups successfully fighting the thinning of forests, the building of dams, and the maintenance of power line corridors. The consequences is a catastrophic buildup of fuels on the forest floor, the least spark of which results in nearly uncontrollable conflagrations. I'm glad these guys pointed this out. As in Venezuela and the other failed Marxist states, rolling power outages have become common. The last few weeks have seen huge swaths of California subjected to mandatory electrical blackouts as utility companies cut power. Morgan Hill, a suburb of San Francisco, has invoked dusk to dawn curfews in an attempt to keep the inhabitants from looting and killing one another during the blackouts. Welcome to socialism. And so let's take a look at this. This phenomenon. Where there is socialism, there is a degraded level of utilities and services. namely the first indicator. And I've been watching this kind of at a distance, just pondering this. The first indicator of the downhill slide in a socialist culture is the loss of commercial power. Now, of course, they always have a way of explaining this is because of wildfires. It's because of high winds. And they've had high winds. They've had high heat. They've had wildfires in the past. None of them have been as devastating as they are now. And they seem to be related to the commercial power. Well, in this case, it's because of the insanity of this climate cult that prevents these guys from properly maintaining these areas. So naturally, arcing and fires are going to ensue. But we won't blame it on that. We'll blame it on something else. A corporate greed, right? So let's take a look at some examples. Let's go to Sweden. Let's start right off in Sweden. Good old Sweden, the perfect country. Now, they're not technically a socialist country because the government doesn't own everything, but they control everything. They tax everything, right? They're essentially heavily socialistic policies. So this is from thetrumpet.com. As the infrastructure in certain large cities, including the nation's capital, Stockholm, is not yet ready to change the source of its energy from fossil fuel plants to cleaner alternatives, hundreds of thousands of Swedes, if not more, will face power outages. What? Yep. Heading into the coldest months of the year, modern socialists, now the further down in the article, he nails it. Modern socialists in America vow to fight global warming and help save the environment. They aspire to end poverty and resolve inequality. But if the ideas of the Green New Deal or any other socialist policies were to go into effect, the entire U.S. economy would be seized and governed by Washington, D.C. We would experience the same kind of initial failures taking place in Sweden. And along with the expansion of socialism, Americans' quality of life would quickly dwindle to that of Venezuelans. That is so well summed up. And remember, let's go back to the previous article about Governor Newsom saying, because of these wildfires, it's about dog-eat-dog capitalism meeting climate change. It's about corporate greed meeting climate change. It's about decades of mismanagement. So, and I would agree, it's mismanagement by the government. But see, what they're doing is they're creating the conflict now between greed, corporate greed, and capitalism, which to them is synonymous. Capitalism is the same as corporate greed, which is the enemy of climate change policy. And climate change policy is there to save all of us and save our planet. And if you're opposing climate change, then you are for corporate greed, capitalism, wildfires, the loss of life, the loss of property, and it's all your fault. It's never going to be their fault, ever. But the New American, just this last September, came out with their article, The New American Dealt with Socialism. Matter of fact, it was originally this article I'm going to cover appeared in the New American's September 2nd edition, which was a special report on socialism. And this is something that, you know, I've talked with others, talking to Lady Liberty about this. And it's interesting to note wherever Marxism or socialism is prevalent, you have a loss of services. It's degraded. I was in East Germany. I was in East Berlin before the wall fell. Gray, dingy, stuff didn't work, potholes, broken up streets. And wherever there's socialism, and people that have come from these countries will attest, elevators don't work, water doesn't work. I mean, there's for days. They have rolling blackouts. They have controlled, where you can only run your electricity for certain times of the day. It's anytime there's socialism, Marxism, communism, you have a degraded lifestyle and standard of living, and the services take a hit. But it's always somebody else's fault. It was always some mismanagement or it was whatever. But in this article, which is really well done, he writes, the flaws of socialism are somewhat hidden in countries that enacted socialism after they were wealthy, like Venezuela. But in countries that instituted it when they were poor, the trends are clear. With much of the world adopting socialism in some form, it can be difficult to generalize about what socialism actually is. Socialist countries such as Sweden, Sri Lanka, and North Korea are worlds apart, featuring very different climates, cultures, and standards of living. The reason for this illusion of diversity is that the starting point for socialism is so different from one country to the next. Some countries adopt socialism after having amassed a lot of wealth via the free market, capitalism, while others adopt socialism in the hopes that it will somehow lift them out of long-standing poverty and degraded standards of living. And for some, socialism is imposed suddenly and violently, as with Soviet Russia and Communist China. And for others, it makes its appearance incrementally, or Fabian socialism, over several generations, corroding the wealth and social mores so gradually that many fail to notice its encroachments. Interesting. But what he does is he goes down through this article and he points out the degraded standard of living as these slowly take over. And he breaks this down. Everything breaks easily. Few of us truly appreciate the benefits of a free society, including marketplace competition, until the experience is absent. Every item manufactured and sold on the modern world is the product of literally thousands of hands and minds contributing. But then starts talking about the degrading in a socialist environment. In modern socialist countries, you can buy the same types of items in stores that Americans take for granted. Household appliances, plastic bags, toilet paper, paint, plaster, and other building materials, and so on. But newcomers to socialist economies are always startled at how fragile and perishable everything seems to be compared to American products. Paint flakes off walls within a few months of being applied. Book and notebook bindings fall apart after scant use. Wall fixtures, such as clothing racks and hooks, fall out of walls as a result of disintegrating plaster. So he goes down through this, and it's true. If you've been in socialist countries, it's like everything's just falling apart. Nothing holds up. It's just junk, just like their policies. Drinking water is hazardous. What's more, sewers and drains work poorly, if at all. That's another really good one. Yeah, toilets won't flush. They can't get fresh water. Or sometimes they work, sometimes they won't. They back up. The water's tainted. Don't drink the water, you know, for the next week, which always turns into a month. The economy's largely built around foreign tourism. Walls, barbed wire, and broken glass. Although the great poet Robert Frost once famously proclaimed that something there is that doesn't love a wall. That stricture does not apply to socialist countries. Even a casual visitor to most of the socialist world cannot fail to notice the prevalence of walls, usually topped with barbed or razor wire and jagged pieces of broken glass stuck in the cement. That is true. That is true. This guy's been a few places, and I've seen that. It's unbelievable. It's a great article. Poor power grid and communications infrastructure. It's another one. The phones don't work, or they work intermittently. And when they do work, they're controlled by the government. So if they don't want you communicating, they can just shut it down. In most socialist countries outside of Western Europe, electrical outages are common, especially when they are least convenient, such as during a wildfire, maybe. Such as during heat waves. There we go. This was written in September, before all wave after wave of wildfires in California. This is true to the extent that such countries are electrified at all. Large parts of rural India and Africa, for example, still possess little or no electrification. And even in urban areas, electrical services can be so unreliable that all responsible businesses, hotels that cater to foreigners, for dependable AC and cable TV, for example, must invest heavily in industrial-grade generators. And in countries such as China, where the electrical grid is on a firmer footing, other features of modern infrastructure depend on power, such as internet and cell phone networks. Those are sketchy at best. And of course, he goes into more detail there. Strict currency controls, censorship and propaganda, and everyone wants to leave. Isn't that interesting now, where we see this massive exodus of people leaving California? California has all the signs and symptoms of the early stages of socialist policy, the effects of socialist policy. And we're seeing it. I know there's a lot of patriots that are still in California for whatever reason. Hey, when you can, prayerfully make the decision. If you make the decision prayerfully that it's right for you, strategically relocate to one of the free zones and get out of occupied territory. All right, hold the ground for as long as you can, while you can. But, hey, don't wait like the Jews in Poland did. They didn't want to leave Warsaw, right, until pretty soon they woke up where they couldn't leave because they were surrounded by barbed wire. Leave now, but you got the choice. All right, segment three coming up. We're going to talk about the Civil War and some stuff that Sam Culper from Forward Observer has to weigh in on that. Anyway, stay right there. This is Radio Free Redoubt.
The number you have reached, 911, has been changed to a non-published number.
Hi, I want to take a moment to let you all know about a great offer that will put up-to-the-minute intelligence and breaking news in your hands, often minutes or hours before you'll hear about it on the news or anywhere else. The director of Alerts USA and the editor of The Threat Journal, Steve Oxtokolnis, is offering a discounted subscription to all of you as listeners of Radio Free Redoubt and members of Amron. The Alerts USA subscription is normally $99 a year, but if you click on the Alerts USA banner at RadioFreeRedoubt.com or Amron.com, that will take you through to a page where you can subscribe for just $75. Whether it's a natural disaster, active shooter, terrorist attack, or other rapidly developing security or emergency situation, you'll be among the first to know. Information is king, but accurate and timely information is priceless. I not only use Alerts USA, I count on it. However, if you're not able to pay for a subscription at this time, then you can still sign up for the free Threat Journal email subscription to get weekly intelligence briefs and stay in the know on what occurred in the previous days. Again, go to RadioFreeRedoubt.com or Amron.com and click on the Alerts USA banner. All right, this is segment three of Radio Free Redoubt, and segment three is brought to you by Strategic Landscape Design, designed to help keep you safe and to help you thrive. If you are buying property, or if you've already bought property and you want some professional help getting the most out of your property with the consulting service, whether you live in the American Redoubt or outside the American Redoubt, they help you with some of the key elements of water, food, energy, and security, setting it up for the most sustainable strategic design with your built into your landscaping and the layout of your land. Check them out at strategiclandscapedesign.com. All right, now, Civil War. A lot of talk about this now. It's becoming mainstream now. Matter of fact, the Washington Examiner just came out with an article that just came out, well, this week, just a few days ago, titled Battleground. 7 in 10 says U.S. is on the edge of civil war. 7 in 10 of these people that were polled. And the article states here, and we'll put this in the highlights and resources posting. You can go check it out yourself. It's at the Washington Examiner. It's titled Battleground. 7 in 10 says the U.S. is on the edge of a civil war. Partisan political division and the resulting incivility has reached a low in America, with 67% believing that the nation is nearing civil war, according to a new national survey. The executive director at Georgetown University, which is the Institute of Politics and Public Service, said the majority of Americans believe that we are two-thirds of the way to being on the edge of civil war. Now, I don't know how they measure that, two-thirds. What's a third? When have you reached a third, or when have you reached two-thirds? But the sentiment there is that reached two-thirds of the way toward a civil war. And worse, he said in announcing the results of the Institute's battleground poll, the political division is likely to make the upcoming 2020 presidential race the nastiest in modern history. And it says, highlighting findings that show voters angered with compromise and growing unfavorable ratings of President Trump at most 2020 Democratic presidential candidates. And he said, it paints a scenario, a picture of a highly negative campaign that will continue to exacerbate the incivility of our public discourse. He said, basically called it a race to the bottom. Or it has the potential to race to the bottom. So, very interesting. This poll showed, or the study showed, 87% of us are frustrated with the rudeness in politics today. Also, it says politics really isn't interested in traditional compromise. For example, nearly equal 84% said they are not tired of leaders compromising their values. 84% said that they are tired of leaders compromising their values and ideals. So they're saying, I believe what they're basically saying is that I believe in common ground. It's just that the common ground is where I'm standing. It's an interesting way of putting it. So yeah, this is really interesting to watch this unfold. But you see online banter, you see even in our mainstream news, you see this rise, this heading toward a civil war. Well, there's an interesting article that just came out over at Greenwich Time talking about a Major League Baseball umpire who's being investigated for reportedly threatening statements about Civil War. So this is what they wrote. As millions of fans prepared to watch the Washington Nationals obliterate the Houston Astros on Wednesday, a tweet posted by Major League Baseball umpire Rob Drake caught the attention of an ESPN reporter. And this is what apparently this umpire tweeted. I will be buying an AR-15 tomorrow because if you impeach my president this way, you'll have another civil war. MAGA 2020. He's from Arizona. He deleted the tweet right away. But a few days later, somebody had grabbed a screenshot of this. He says, you can't do an impeachment inquiry from the basement of Capitol Hill without even a vote. What is going on in this country? So he's all upset. So now he's being investigated. This full-time Major League Baseball umpire since 2010. And let me look here a little further. Drake's tweet suggesting violence over Trump's increasing political peril echoed a right-wing talking point that began on the extreme fringes of the political spectrum, but has grown increasingly common. Now, when you talk about communist revolutionaries saying we are going to take this over by force, we're going to kick Trump out, when we see unlawful actions being taken and false accusations reported, even if it's true, even if the latest accusations are true, with the deal with Ukraine, there have been so many false reports for so long that they have no credibility, and people are frustrated. They're fed up with it. But it's got the left frothing at the mouth, worked up. I mean, look, people were flying banners, impeach Trump, on day one when he became president. So this has been their sentiment. They're just looking for evidence to support their dream of impeaching him because they hate what he stands for. What he stands against. He stands against Marxism, against socialism, against globalism. He wants to put America first. And they hate him. They hate him badly. And so the things that they're doing, the underhanded measures, this continuous ongoing coup against the executive branch of our government has been going on for so long. People are frustrated. Now, when you have leftists talking about harming people and actually doing it to force Marxism on, especially right now, the cities and within our government through our policies. When people say, we will not accept this, we're going to stand against this, eventually you're going to have a fight. One of the two parties is going to have to back down and capitulate. But you have two different sides saying, we're not going to give. I don't see a way out of this other than with a fight. But this started with right-wing rhetoric calling for violence, right? Well, this is going to be interesting to watch unfold. That's about all I want to say on that. This will be a short segment. The next one's going to be a short segment too, because I want to talk about Sam Culper and what he had to say, kind of weighing in on this over at the Forward Observer. So anyway, stick around. Segment 4 coming up right after this. Hi everyone, this is John Jacob Schmidt, here to tell you about the 299 Days book series by lawyer and author Glenn Tate. Follow him through his real-life story of transitioning from middle-aged, unprepared suburbanite to full-blown prepper, tactical team member, and provider and protector of his family. Go to 299days.com to learn more.
Lenin put it this way, it does not matter if three-quarters of mankind is destroyed, all that counts is that the last quarter is communist. Lenin spoke, communist world domination.
All right, this is the fourth segment, and this is the final segment of episode 1939. Segment 4 here, brought to you by Works Holsters. That's Works LLC, and they are located in the heart of the American Redoubt. Works.com is the website, W-E-R-K-Z.com, to find out how you can get your hands on your custom-made Kydex holster and magazine carriers at Works.com. Okay, so I mentioned Forward Observer and Sam Culper doing a great job kind of staying on top of this. I'm a subscriber of his intelligence reports. Really, really well done. Very insightful. Usually get daily reports from them and then, of course, a weekly summary. So I want to share a little bit of this with you. He sent one out. New predictions of civil unrest. Here's the first thing to do. That's the title of the piece that just came out this week. But before I get into that, he says about these generals now that are calling, speaking out against President Trump, and they're leftists. They're on board with the Council on Foreign Relations and the cabal, the establishment, really. Of course, when you're a general, you're pretty much a politician. You work your way up. Once you become a general, it's a political game. So that's to be expected. Now, fortunately, there are a lot of really great patriots among our general staff. But there are some that they are on board with the globalist system of governance. And he poses, Sam Culper poses a couple thoughts here. And he says, first of all, I wonder how these retired military leaders, who by most accounts are well-respected, despite their anti-Trump leanings, could influence a country on the cusp of open conflict. That's a very interesting point. Several years ago, I read the book When the Almond Tree Blossoms by David Akeman, which talks about the United States descending into a civil war and how the military even was divided. Now, just recently, I read Mark Goodwin's series. It was a trilogy called Ava's Crucible, following the main character, a female named Ava, a conservative Christian, and things descend into. And it was, Antifa raids their church, and some people get hurt, people get killed, and this just escalates. And very interesting, but it basically culminates in a civil war in the United States, sharply divided, very much along similar lines as what was identified, geographic lines and socio-political lines, as what was identified in When the Almond Tree Blossoms. Really fascinating read. A couple different takes and different angles, of course, different authors. But both of them very plausible, I think. And we saw a divide in the military where conservative, constitutional-minded, nationalistic military leaders were taking command of their commands and joining the Patriots or the Constitutionalists, while the others were loyal to the globalist way of thinking and ended up in a civil war. So this interesting point to bring up here, these military leaders who are anti-Trump, how could they possibly, or could they, to what extent could they influence our country, which is on the cusp of an open conflict? Because a lot of people look to them, and they're influential. And, of course, the conservative, patriot, constitutional-minded generals are pretty much keeping it zipped, right, holding things a little closer to the vest. So, of course, a lot of these guys don't get real outspoken until after they retire. Then they become, guests, talking heads on these various different news agencies. But the second thing that he proposed here, Sam Culper proposed his thought, for the amount of time, money, and effort being pumped into the anti-Trump resistance, a conservative defiance movement against the next Democratic president and his or her anti-Second Amendment policies is going to plunge pockets of the country into an incredibly precarious situation. It's just an objective observation that Sam Culper's making. And he says, as always, my advice is to observe and monitor your own backyard. Regardless of what's happening in and around Washington, D.C., in the coming months and years, the end result is whatever affects you locally. Start there. And that's a good point, because people are saying, you know, well, what do we do? How do we prepare for a civil war? What would we even do? What would our role be? How would that play out? Well, start locally. So I want to share this with you. What Sam puts out this week, he writes about this Georgetown University, 7 in 10 Americans say that the country is on the edge of civil war. And then he says, that's not news, but it's continuing evidence to support the take that a large portion of Americans are uneasy about the country's future. There are lots of predictions that impeachment is going to cause massive civil unrest. As I covered in one of my early warning reports this week, read to you a few minutes ago, there's solid evidence to suggest that left-wing activists will push mass mobilization during the impeachment process to pressure the Senate to remove President Trump from office. Bottom line, you should expect mass mobilization of activists and protesters across the country. If you share the concern that civil unrest will surround the impeachment process, here's the absolute first thing I'd do. And this is Sam Culper talking from the Forward Observer. Identify the left-wing and right-wing activist groups that operate in your area or the areas closest to you. Make a list. If left-wing activists mobilize to conduct protest activities ranging from civil disobedience to direct action, then you can expect some disruptions to take place. That disruption may include the blocking of key bridges and intersections, commercial and worker strikes, student walkouts, the harassment of Trump supporters or other Republicans, and potentially political violence. I'll have more in this week's Watch Report, my weekly intelligence report that documents the progression of our domestic conflict. And then finally, I want to share this with you. He also adds, if you want insight into what's going on in this conflict, what you can expect, and when you can expect it, then start a free 7-day trial to my warning service. You can sign up here, and that's at forwardobserver.com/trial. Always out front, Sam Culper. So great job. And so, yeah, I want to share that with you guys. I really appreciate the work that they do over at Forward Observer. I subscribe, and I really appreciate his insight. So if you guys want to check that out, seven-day free trial, go to forwardobserver.com. And that's, you know, I'm going to wrap it up right there. I've got some other stuff in my notes that I had thought about covering, but I'm going to go ahead and save that. You guys got enough to chew on for right now. But anyway, you stay safe out there. Keep your powder dry and have a blessed week. Oh, and don't forget to stick around after the show. Immediately after Radio Free Redoubt is over, the 10th episode of Liberty State Radio featuring Lady Liberty will be playing. Right after that will be this week's weekly update from Alerts USA, followed by the usual I Was a Communist with the FBI. That segment will play, and then we'll close with The Cry of a Prisoner from Geneva Black. So anyway, this has been the 39th episode of 2019, and that concludes the show of The Voice of the American Redoubt. I'm John Jacob Schmidt, and if you're a God-fearing, liberty-loving patriot, my name is your name too. Good night.